Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, welcome to the Creative Literal Sides Show. Today with Dean Bell from Nations United University and co-host Mr. Bob from Wisconsin, the man of many talents and skills and knowledge. Are you there, Bob?
I am here. Thank you for a great introduction. I don't know if I'm that highly talented, but I'm here.
Excellent. And how's the weather over there in Wisconsin today?
Oh, it's pretty sunny except for the chemtrails.
It's cloudy.
Yeah, we got those too, pretty much day and night. Some days we get a relief, but some days it's pretty bad here too in Huntington Beach where we're broadcasting from. So today it's a little bit rainy here, actually. Jean, who we're going to interview today, she's up north of us. She's getting a downpour right now, and we're expecting rain where we are in a minute, too. So welcome, everybody, to the show. On this show, we take what's literal and bring it around to where people have an opportunity to see more and become more aware. After all, there is more than one dimension. And that's as proven by the Twilight Zone series, if you've ever seen that. So we've been, we can begin by supporting the all-natural environment that makes sense because it supports all of us. In our nonprofit, the New Presentation Foundation promotes and supports individuals and organizations all over the world that actually are doing something to benefit the environment, not just talk about it, but actually doing something. So individuals such as Felix Finkbeiner, he's a German youth that about 10 years ago or so, he started his own nonprofit, Plant for the Planet. And he has planted more than 14 billion trees more than 130 nations. And then there's the Great Green Wall Project in the Sahara. They're trying to back off the Sahara Desert, which is expanding. And then they're planting 4,000 miles full of trees. That's a little bit installed, but that's the kind of idea that that we support. And today, here locally, in Huntington Beach, California, we have with us an individual who has helped plant over 7,000 trees here in the city, and she's probably thinking about planting could be a million more. Who knows? She's had a good start here. And,
I'm too old for that.
Well, hopefully, like you said, there's people after you that will take up the torch.
Yes, you know? Yes.
So her name here is Jean Nage, and she's the founder and she president of the Huntington Beach Tree Society, a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to the beautification of the local community by caring and protecting the California native trees and plants. And I met Jean at a local council meeting here where she was, she's been a regular visitor there to the council meetings, and she shares and garners support for her projects. And one of our projects is going around to the 34 cities here in Orange County and proposing fruit tree plantings throughout the cities. So we have something in common here, and I invited her on the show to talk about her projects. And so how are you doing, Jean?
Fine, thank you very much.
Yeah, can you talk about how you got started with all this? 7,000 trees, that's quite a bit, and I guess over 25 years or so?
It's getting close to that, a couple of years short of that. A while back, like 20-something years ago, my husband got transferred. We were living up towards San Francisco, and he got transferred back down to this area. So when we moved in, I just felt Huntington Beach was truly in need of trees, some more greenery, some more green. And so I would kind of go to the council people, and I got on the environmental board of the city, and then I would say to the council people, let's plant some more trees. And the one councilman says, well, why don't you do something? So anyway, I said, okay, I'll start a tree society. So he kind of helped me, and we got started. And then I went to the city, and there's about 66 pocket parks. They're called little pocket parks. They're like an acre plus in each neighborhood. And I got the original plans, landscape plans for each park slowly, and wrote grants. And first of all, I figured out which trees were missing out of each park. And then I wrote grants for the state of California and got the money to replace the trees. And the city was very nice to partnership with me. So on the weekends, the city would send out a crew, and I'd get the high school kids, and then I'd have the money for the trees, and we replanted most of the parks again. That's how it got started. And then the city gave me this, I don't know, about 4 or 5 acres of vacant land, and then I started my urban forest. And I've been working on that ever since. So that's where I'm at.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Is this near Shipley or Nature Center, or where is this?
Yes,
2 acres?
The urban forest is on the Central Park in Huntington Beach. Is about 350 acres, and it's divided by the street called Golden West divides it. So there's the east side and the west side of Central Park, and my urban forest is on the west side of Central Park. It's behind the equestrian center, and it was just this huge area of vacant land just sitting there forever. And City Gate started me going, and we've been going ever since. And now we're making a trail from the Shipley Nature Center that will go to the ocean, and it's called Shipley to Shore. And this trail, when completed, would be about I'd say about 6 miles one way. And the part that I'm working on right now, trying to raise money for trees and plants on this trail, is located in the west side of Central Park. So that's what I'm focusing most of my attention on, is this trail, Shipley to Shore.
Yeah, I'm from Northern California. We have a nice little trail from the Coast Range to the Pacific Ocean. I think it's about 12 miles. I hiked that once. It took me, you know, the day, but it's a nice trail through the redwoods, and lots of native plants. You know, the bays and laurels and madrones and stuff. Very, very nice. So, does this trail also go through? Is it just pretty much cleared, or does it have trees? Are you planning to plant trees?
Well, the part that starts at the Shipley Nature Center and goes through the old section of Central Park is very tree-lined. Then the trail goes from the old section of Central Park up through this huge, I don't know how many acres this is, of that was vacant land that I've been replanting since 01. So I've been working on it for about 15 years now. So that is the area that I am working on getting money to plant more trees and native plants. And then the trail goes into the county section, and that has pretty much, it's pretty green, but it needs a few more trees. And then it goes into a regional park, through a regional park, the Harriet Regional Park, and then it hits the ocean. So it's mainly, since it's so close to the ocean, it's more, it's called California scrub, coastal sage scrub. So there's not tons of trees because Harriet Weeder wants to keep their park more natural of what actually would have grown here way back when. But
and
I'm
the trees that you do have, what are they? Are they pretty much native to the area? Like the oaks and
I try to stick to mostly native trees. A lot of coast live oaks, you know, because I am so afraid that we are going to go back into the desert. And there's Takati cypress, you know, a lot of these trees that really are hardy and can stand the drought. So I'm trying to think ahead, because if we don't get rain again like this and it goes back to our drought, I want these trees to make it. So every tree I put in along the trail, I'm trying to make sure that it's extremely hardy and California native.
Well, part of what we do is to educate people, and one of the things we mentioned is the primary water sources that is available. If people would only encourage their governments and others to facilitate the it's underground water basically, artesian wells, and it's underground, and there's plenty of water underneath, no matter what the government has been telling us. The source for this water is the hydrogen and the oxygen combining and then coming up as condensation and creating rain and snow and what we had called secondary water up above. But there's plenty of water. It's just getting people to, understand that and agree to getting it out.
Well, here in Huntington Beach, I don't think most people know that, but we do drink toilet water. It's toilet to tap, it's called. And the water purification plant in Fountain Valley, it's only Huntington Beach and Fountain Valley, and then they clean the water, and it's so purified and clean that you can go over to the plant and drink the water straight from where the cleaning area is. But they reinsert that water back into the aquifers here in Huntington Beach. So, yes, there is plenty of water, but it's only mainly because of that purification plant in Fountain Valley. There's loads of water here that they reinsert back into the aquifers. And then the water district pulls it back out of the aquifers, you know, and does whatever they have to do before they put it back into the pipes. But some of the other cities don't clean their water like we do. They don't drink toilet to tap. And so that's a big problem.
Right. Bob, you can come in anytime you like, if you have anything to share, too.
Well, I was just going to say, Gene, you know, you talk about the drought out there. Did you know that drought is not a natural drought? Are you aware of that at all?
I don't understand your question.
All right. Well, you talked about, you know, you're worried about going back into desert conditions and the drought happening in California, and it's drying out and becoming a desert. Well, one of the things that Val was mentioning is we educate the public of what's going on, and one of the things we educate people on is the fact that these droughts are caused by governments actually engineering the weather And they're the ones that intentionally caused the droughts. They've been causing the drought in California ever since day one, you know, like 30 or 40 years ago. That's all done by the government. And if we would educate people to tell the government to quit using their high-tech HAARP systems and whatever they use, the chemtrails and all that, we could have natural rainfall, and then California would be restored to its native pristine state just like it was hundreds of years ago.
Well, I think along the coast, there were really no, you know, like super big trees because of the water. You know, it didn't really rain like in Northern California does. But I really am focusing on plants and trees, and I don't get involved with why we shouldn't or should not do certain things, even though I know certain things, because once I get everybody upset with me, then I can't do what I really want to accomplish because I want to get my trail accomplished. And I'm working on city land, and if they, you know, get upset with me because I come storming in, then I am not going to accomplish what I want to accomplish.
I stay out of the politics.
Yes.
That's why it's so interesting interviewing you, because you're actually doing this. It's like Felix. He has his poster up. It's got a hand on up in front of a politician's mouth. It says, "Stop talking and start planting." And,
correct.
And this is what's growing.
If you get everybody upset, then you can't really keep rocking and rolling. So that's why I like to stay out of the politics of it too much. And then I got to get the grants from the state of California too.
Right. Yeah, there's a line here. You have to
manage
the
way to put it. There is a line. Yes. I'm working all on city property, so I can be asked to leave at any time.
So how was the grant writing? Was that you, or did you have help with that?
I taught myself how to do it. It's California Relief is a state organization that helps grassroots small groups like mine to get small grants, you know, like $5,000, $10,000 grants, not the big ones. So by joining California Relief, you know, it's easy to write the grants because they're very helpful, and, you know, they make them not as difficult when you start writing the $25,000, $30,000 grants. So I thank California Relief, that organization, for helping me.
And I just saw that you got a $2,000 grant from a realtor organization. Is that recent?
Yes.
Is that an old news item?
No, they just gave that. That was last fall. And Boeing usually gives us money. We put out a newsletter every year. They give us citizens give us money. People donate money to me all the time. I'm not having too much trouble right now getting money. I have trouble with too many volunteers coming at once because, you know, you can only handle so many at a time. And everybody wants to do something. But I would like to say to you guys about tree planting. When people brag about how many trees they put in the ground, to me, it isn't the number of trees that you plant. It's the number of trees that you take care of. Because anybody can plant a tree. And all these people come to me, oh, I want to plant a tree, I want to plant a tree. And then do you ever see them again after they plant a tree? No. So I work with a lot of Eagle Scouts and high school kids, and I tell them it doesn't do you any good to put a tree in the ground unless you are going to take care of it for about the first 2 years. And that means watering it, restaking it when it falls over, trimming it, all those things. And so I always question all these people when they go, well, unless you got a team following behind you and taking care of these trees, it's just not right. It's a lot of work to take care of trees, to make them get to full. fruition.
Yeah, that was one of the problems with this green wall in the Sierra. The Sahara, at least 80% of the trees died, you know, after the first year because of what you're talking about. So
exactly.
There are solutions. I don't know if you're familiar with the Groasis water box or similar.
No. Oh, yes, but somebody still has to take care of that. It's like somebody has to be connected to the tree, whether it's a group or a person or what. But you just can't walk away unless we're maybe in Hawaii where it's so tropical or in the tropics. You can plant something and walk away. But here, no. Not here. Not in Southern California anyway.
So I noticed that's what you're trying to do is match a person with each tree that you plant or a student or child? Is that
the
idea?
Well, we have usually come up every Saturday and we work and I have all these volunteers that whatever we put in the ground, we make sure it is being cared for. And we're just not, you know, running to the next project, which a lot of people like to do. And then all of a sudden you see in cities that you'll see these street trees that are just sad because nobody's really taking care of them. And it was worse before it started raining here in Southern California. The last 2 years, it was a disaster. The beetles were coming in because these trees weren't getting watered. And all this infestation came. And it was because the trees were just dying of thirst. And nobody was out there giving them, like, people in front of their house wouldn't even put their hose out on those parkway trees. You know, just soak them. It's, you know, it's hard to get people to do stuff as far as really paying attention to get, you know, to care for the trees.
So
but
she's
I'm
here for them here. you are. And so what I'm hearing is it's easier to get them out there to plant the tree, but to maintain the tree down the line, it's a little bit more difficult to have that follow through.
Yes. Yes, it is.
And you're,
it's even difficult for cities. It's difficult because they'll have a water truck or something in a city to water the street trees, but then all of a sudden they're short a person, so they take the person off the water truck, then the trees don't get watered. And if you talk to most cities, they even had a show on TV about Los Angeles, the tree department in Los Angeles, how, you know, if they ever need money, that's where they take the money out of, is out of the landscape tree department, and then all of a sudden it's down to nothing, and you know nobody's really watering the trees. And it's if more people have to stand up and say, yes, I want these trees taken care of, I want the money in the budget, and I want it to stay there in the budget to take care of the trees and the plants. But we need to keep educating people to tell them to do that.
Exactly. Yeah, education and awareness is key.
Yes.
Because
cities are notorious for when they're short of money, they run to the, you know, park tree and landscape division or the park funds and get it out of there first. Yeah.
So
unless you have private groups kind of following behind them, you know, taking care of what they don't do, then that's when you see all this damage. The trees that were infested with beetles this past 2 years when we had the drought was just terrible, terrible.
Oh, Gene, I have a...
Go ahead.
I just had a quick question. You know, in your effort to educate people, have you ever thought about the since you're getting the funding to actually get the trees or the seedlings or whatever it is that you go plant, has anybody considered that in order to get people personally involved might be to actually give people plants, you know, pot a plant and a little, you know, cheap plastic planter and give people the seedlings and they can take it home and put it on their kitchen room, their dining room table and grow it until it's maybe a foot or 2 feet high and then transplant the tree after it's already started to grow, and that way you get people personally involved and they know what is involved with doing a tree. I mean, you could do this with the kids and all that, you know, it's personal involvement but they don't have to, you know, and once they get the tree up high enough to transplant into one of the parks, then they probably have enough motivation and interest to actually watch it grow and take care of it after they get a transplant. Like when I was a kid, one of the big things that I was raised with was, you know, plant trees, and then as a little kid, and then when you grow up, you can see, you know, as you age, you can see how the tree is aging, and I planted a blue spruce on my mom's property where my brother still lives, and the thing's about 60 feet tall, and it's one of the most beautiful trees on the property. The bottom branches are about, you know, 12 feet across, and it's just gorgeous, you know, and that's one I planted when I was like 6 years old. You know, so it's a possibility to get a vested interest in the public.
Well, one of our goals, or our mission statements, I should say, is every tree we put in the ground, we try to connect with the child, so that later on, I'm a past school teacher, so that later on this child knows that that's their tree. But I work with, you know, these Eagle Scouts who are just bright kids, wonderful, wonderful kids. And they say, yeah, they're going to come back. Yeah, they're going to water. Yeah. No. It's easier said than done when it doesn't rain here. When you probably, in an area, your tree, when you planted it, probably it rained. And it got
into it. Well, it did in Illinois, but that's not my point is if they could grow it at home. You know, instead of
we
just going
out,
you know, 20 miles
we
from where
out.
They live and planting it, you know, it's a lot different when you raise it, you know, up to a couple feet tall in your house, you know, or your apartment. It beautifies your apartment, plus it gives you a vested interest in it. And then later when you go plant it, then you got a vested interest by these kids.
Yes. I mean, you're absolutely correct, but everybody is so busy, even at the Christmas, I mean, I should say holiday trees, they come. They bring them. Yes, you can plant it. You can do it. Nobody shows up afterwards. It's just not easy as everybody thinks it is to get people involved to actually keep taking care of this tree. You know, they come, but anyway.
But if you give them a tree and tell them to go plant it, that's a lot different than spending 2 years at watching the tree grow in your house or apartment and then going out and planting it later. After you've taken care of it for a couple of years, you've got, like I say, a vested interest. I mean, it becomes personal for you. See what I'm saying?
This is another problem. Okay, so you grow your tree at home and you bring it to the park, and you have to stake it. And if you didn't keep transplanting that tree to make it big enough, like 6 feet, 7 feet tall, and you didn't keep transplanting it in different size pots, it becomes root-bound. And then the city says, we don't want those trees, those root-bound trees, in the ground, because those are the ones where the roots go round and round and round because they're so root-bound, and they don't go out. And that's when a windstorm comes, that's when they blow over. So the city only lets us buy trees that come from reputable nurseries that are high-quality trees, and nothing is root-bound. And these people, most of them, don't have the energy, the time to go get more soil, to go get a bigger pot, and this takes about 5 or 6 years to do. And if they can't put in a teeny tiny little tree because it has to be double-staked, otherwise dogs run over it, kids run over it, the tree's gone. So that's another problem. So how you get to the tree to be at least 6 or 7 feet tall so you can double stake it and not be root bound, then you're okay.
Okay, well let me go in a different direction. Now, you said that you're planting native oak trees and stuff that will survive the coastline and that. Just out of curiosity, what are the chances of fruit trees surviving in that California environment?
We had this one up at the urban forest. It was really kind of funny. This one guy came up a long time. I don't know who it was. Somebody came up and threw down a peach seed. And this little I don't know, it looked like a bush was coming up. Nobody was paying that much attention to it. And just like you said, and the thing just kept growing and growing. And I sell what we call, not memorial trees, but to raise money, we will put your name on a tree if you pay $150. So this guy came up, and the little bush was about, I don't know, 3 feet tall, most. And he goes, I want that, my name on that tree. I kind of looked at him funny. But anyway, that tree is now about, I'd say, a good 20 feet tall because it's over close to 15 years old. And it's beautiful. And we have an apple tree for the birds. We have the peach tree, the apple tree. We have about four trees. And I'm for fruit trees. It's just that what you have to do then is when the fruit comes, who's going to pick it and who's going to clean it up? Because we have a lot of people that come up to that park at night and we have no clue what they're doing, and they do a lot of strange things up in that huge, because it's a native natural park. And, you know, they start throwing that fruit around. So, you know, I'm for fruit trees, and I think as long as you can fence it off and make it into like a planted area, it's great. Yeah, I am for fruit trees.
Well, you know,
we are.
Also, what I was thinking was if it's hard to get people to take care of oak trees, you know, if you went in the direction of fruit trees and said it was for a humanitarian cause to feed the needy, you know, and wrote the story right, you might get a little more backing along that particular avenue.
Well, you do have to. I don't have trouble getting trees. I don't have trouble getting plants. I have really been blessed. I have plenty of people to help me. Only trouble I have now is I want to build a bridge over this little creek, a picturesque little bridge, and it's $50,000. So I'm having trouble because the city doesn't want to have anybody build the bridge. They want a bridge company so that, you know, if something happens, all the liability goes back to the bridge company. So that's what I'm working on right now is my bridge. So I need to make $50,000. That's what I'm at. But I don't have any trouble getting trees. I don't have trouble.
I understand you don't have any problem getting trees. But what I'm saying is if you started doing some fruit trees, you might get more motivation on part of the public if you push the idea that was to help the homeless and the needy and all that. If you know, people can't live off an oak tree unless you're a squirrel living in a putting your acorns up there somewhere. But humans, you know, fresh fruit trees like peach trees and apple trees and cherry trees and stuff. You know, I grew up in the Midwest, and they're all over the place, and they're wonderful. You know, it's wonderful to walk out in an orchard and pick all the fresh apples you can until, you know, you can't eat anymore, and then grab a handful and take them home and have mom make some apple pie. I mean, it's a wonderful thing, you know, and I'm thinking that, you know, pushing the fruit idea might give you better results. That's all I'm saying, you know.
Well, I was going to do this year, there was a fenced area, quite large, around by the horse pasture. And I was going to put in the citrus trees, bring back, this is Orange County. And I was going to bring back all the different varieties of citrus trees and to show the kids what it looks like to see all these fruit on these trees. But then here came the citrus disease. And then the agriculture department didn't want any new trees, citrus trees, brought into this area because of this, I forgot what bug it is that's here. And that stopped me. But, yes, I was going to put in this huge citrus archer, yes. But that slowed me down. So.
Yeah, I've been to Home Depot. They haven't sold any new citrus because of that infestation.
Right.
But yes. Just along the lines of, have you had any experience with planting trees along the streets or not in the parks, but along the public roadways at all?
I didn't want to because I had so much work for doing every park. I mean, it was such a, you know, it's me getting all these people. So, you know, just to do all the 66 parks was a lot of work. And no, I didn't do street trees because I'm really scared of the liability, kids getting hurt. And even though I have a lot of insurance on the Tree Society, it still makes me nervous with those kids. And we, our little parkways are only like 2 feet wide. If they were wider, it would be better. It almost doesn't make sense to put a tree in those parkways in Huntington Beach. But,
right.
You know, a lot of the trees made it here. But
and
I'm
you
just
mentioned
scared
insurance.
Of,
you have insurance for
I'm
the Tree
of the,
Society?
Yes.
So.
Yes. Yeah, but I'm scared of the liability. The cars, everybody in Huntington Beach goes 50 miles an hour, and it just makes me nervous.
Yeah, I'm not used to that. I'm from Northern California, where we have 25-mile-an-hour zones in residential areas, and here you got 45. People go 50.
Yeah, everybody goes 50, and I go 50, and they're passing me. Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's bad.
Well, no, but what you've encountered with the city, has it mainly been Huntington Beach, the city council that you've been working with? Is that the main government organization that you work with?
Yes.
Okay.
We meet with them once a month. We're mainly working on Central Park, revitalizing the whole Central Park, which is the 350 acres, and we meet once a month. And we go over everything that, you know, we think should be addressed and re-looked at. And, yeah, it's been working out good. Yeah. I think we've done a great job.
Is there a committee that the city has for you?
Did what?
Is it a committee that they provide? Who do you work with the city? Is it a committee?
It's called a stakeholders meeting. We meet on the second Wednesday of the month at 4 o'clock at the city hall. And two council people and all the park, tree, and landscape, the three head guys, and the community service head people come to that meeting. So we get a lot done, yeah.
No, I see that. You've done a lot years.
We have a plant nursery. Huntington Beach Conservancy, Wetlands Conservancy down on PCH in Newland, they had a nursery, an outdoor nursery that they used when they redid that whole wetlands area, and they hadn't been using it, so they let us use it. And so we've been growing all of our plants there, which I'm really proud of that. I can't say enough about how proud I am about our little nursery. And everybody comes and, you know, we grow from seed, grow from cuttings. Yeah, we're doing good on the nursery.
Now, how much children and youth involvement have you had? You mentioned the Boy Scouts and some of the high schoolers. How much of they helping out?
Usually every Saturday, every other Saturday, there's somebody there. Last Saturday, I had about 53 kids, helping.
Wow.
Yeah.
These are volunteers from the high school, or?
Yes. They all know my phone number now.
Okay.
They're happy to come.
Yeah, you're very accessible.
Yeah.
How did you round these
kids
up initially?
But they just call me, and I set a date. They all come. They're happy to come. You know, just don't work them too hard. I'm more interested when they come is seeing the urban forest, enjoying it, and they do a little something. Yeah. So, but I'm more interested in them that they see it, and I try to teach them that, yes, they need to do something like this when they're old, like us. When they're old, you need to do this. That's what I always tell them. And they're nice kids, nice kids. Can't say enough about
them. Their survival depends on it. I don't know if you're familiar with the student strikes in Europe right now, but kids are striking because it's their future. The climate and what's happening to it is it's their future, and the politicians are doing nothing really except talking. So they're out there in the streets. I think Germany, every Friday, there's like 20,000 kids marching for something to be done. And that's part of what we're doing, too, just helping people become more aware that, and what you're doing, that, you know, plants are vital to our, to life here on Earth. If we're getting, you know, no plants, and it's not about CO2 either. One thing about CO2, you know, there was a lot more of it actually in the past, and the plants thrive on it. And so it's, the idea is not to get rid of it really, but to, you know, there's other things involved in the mix here, but CO2 is there's not that much in the atmosphere really to what they're saying, and the plants need it. So there's other things going on, in other words, but the main thing here is the survival of the planet. And wondered if you could get into, like, why plants are, for the listeners, why plants and trees are good for, you know, why should we be caring about planting more and having more of these plants that give out oxygen? What's the idea? Why is it so good? What's the benefit?
Well, I think one thing is, you know, everybody knows that trees clean the air, the plants clean the air, but I think one thing is, I keep telling everybody, and I forgot the word, Japan has this word, special word, and it's called forest bathing. And it just means, like, you know, when you go amongst the trees and you go in the forest, you feel better. Your blood pressure goes down. You just feel better. So I say in Huntington Beach, we can do forest bathing and we can do ocean bathing here. So, you know, when the city council, I kind of get, tell them, you guys, because it's expensive for a city to maintain a forest. Is everybody still there?
Yes.
Hello?
We're here.
Okay. So anyway, I think if we all think of forest bathing and going out and sitting amongst the trees, you'll feel better. And I think that's well worth planting trees. I just can't say enough about when you're not feeling good. I mean, I have people come up to me that are sick and just say, I'm just so happy to be walking through this forest. Just makes you feel better. And when you don't, you know, when you have to drive so far to go to a forest area, you know, whereas if you have a little forest in each city, you don't have to get in your car. You can just walk there. So I'm for forest bathing and for tree hugging. I read this little article. It was so cute about how to hug a tree. And one was just to go in the forest first and then feel the vibes and let yourself relax. And then let a tree call you and walk over it to it and hug it. And I thought that was good, too. Yeah. So I think just for a higher quality of life, we need trees. Just besides breathing. Besides breathing.
Yeah, I had an experience where I hiked the Pacific Crest Trail with my son in 2014. That's 2,600 miles. And we were out there in the wilderness for 5 months. We did go into town for supplies, but the experience was such that it just brought to my attention civilization is, there's a lot of unneeded baggage there that we carry with us. You know, all I had is a backpack, basically, and all we did is basically walk, eat, and sleep. We didn't have any other cares. I mean, our cares were like crossing rivers and not slipping down a snowfield. But just basic survival, basic simple being with nature and the environment. And it just, it's what you're talking about too, just being able to go out and experience that and connect. It's just basic things that we've gotten away from with our technology. And it's technology is okay, but it's not really, if it was of a benefit, like the Tesla free energy and, you know, healing EMFs and stuff, but the way it's going right now, it's just harmful. 5G is coming. I don't know if you heard about that, but 5G in the.
But I think what I have the biggest problem with most people is everybody likes to talk it to death. But then if you get them to go, oh, come on out and really help. Oh, well, you know, I always got, you know, I've always got some kind of reason why you can't. And I just get tired of people talking all this to death. And when we actually ask them, well, what have you done lately, actually done to make a difference? You know, there's not too much said. So that's, you know, because I work hard. You know, we work.
That's why we have you on. Yeah, that's exactly why we have. Yeah, that's why
you
caught my attention.
You know, talk, like they say, talk is cheap. Talk is cheap. So, you know, I say, like I say to all these kids, you know, unless you're going to get out there and actually do something, you know, talk is cheap. And you can run the streets and talk all you want, but all these kids that are running the streets could be actually planting, cleaning up, you know, blah blah blah, instead of just talking. So. Yeah, it takes a lot of effort to hang in there.
It does, yeah. I get that. It's not just the talk, but it's so what our organization is doing is kind of like we're all over the place. We're we see the bigger picture in a way, and it's very there's a lot of work to be done, and it's almost impossible. What needs to be done to clean up the planet, to save the planet, if that's even possible. But it takes, just like you, one person at a time and
exactly.
Doing something. And then also, yeah. You know, like you say, these people go back into their lives. Well, it's the agreement. The agreement is what makes things in a way worse, because they're still agreeing to the system that's polluting and poisoning us. So take away that agreement, which takes away the support for these people that are doing these kinds of things, ghastly things, and then just making sense of things with your own community. I mean, you've got your little community going here with your volunteers.
But what I think is what I wanted to try too is, like, get everybody to put an orange tree. Like, orange trees grow like weeds here in Southern California. And everybody should put an orange tree in their yard and give that fruit to the homeless, or give it to anybody who wants it, wants to walk by and take one. So there's, you know, there should be organizations that just give away free fruit trees for people to put in their yard. They don't have to be in parks. And like I said, you see some of these orange trees that are overhanging a fence and in people's yards, and they're just loaded. I have an orange tree in my own yard. I guess my neighbors, you want any of these oranges? No, no, no. Nobody wants them. So I pass them out to everybody. But if everybody put an orange tree in their yard here in Southern California, we would have so many oranges, we wouldn't know what to do with them. I mean, they could be free for everybody. So I think the key is not necessarily in parks. Is everybody put a fruit tree in their own yard and take care of it in your yard. And then pass it away. Give the fruit away. Like, we have a big equestrian center, and there's one section that these women take these. It's called free rein, and they take these horses that are so much. Well, they're going to destroy them. But anyway, they get them and put them in this pasture, and then they raise money to feed them and get them back looking good again and try to find a new home for them. And, I mean, if everybody would raise apple tree in their yard, they could give all those apples to those horses. I mean, there's, to me, the answer is putting the fruit tree in your yard. I have 3 fruit trees in my yard, and I have the puniest, tiniest little yard ever. And, you know, I don't think we need to go to the parks. I'm for free tree in your yard.
That's great. That's a good point. Yeah, I remember Beacon Food Forest up there in Seattle. They 7 acres of land that they put aside for a permaculture food forest. Well, one of the concerns was, well, what if the homeless come and eat the fruit? Well, that's the idea.
Let
you
them
know,
have
it's
it.
For everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's for everybody. So,
right.
Yeah, it's.
But I think we should start in each yard. You know, start with your own, each person's self. Start there. And if you can raise that tree, then, you know, who knows? Maybe you can do another one and get it going. But, yeah.
I just think there's plenty of possibilities with each individual doing something instead of talking it to death.
Exactly. Yeah. You just start from your own home base and build your community like you're doing, like you have with your volunteers and support group, and then just expand from there and then find others like, you know, we'll be doing, I imagine we'll be doing some things together, some projects, because we're waiting on some funding. And once that comes in, we're going to do a lot to enhance people's opportunities to become more aware of what really is, you know, not just with the environment, but with, like I say, going into other dimensions. And it's just, survival is more just physical. It's a lot more with what people think. So we're doing what we can, and you're doing what you can, and it's just wonderful work what you're doing. I really appreciate finding
you. Thank you.
You know,
thank you.
What you've been doing. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, even if people would buy those extra bare root fruit trees from Home Depot or wherever, because they have all those extra bare root at the end of the season, and put them in pots and start raising them, and then put them in their yards. It's waiting to happen, but just nobody does it. That's all.
Yeah. Well, let me go back to the water box that I mentioned before. And if you're not familiar with it, are you familiar with any of these sort of grow boxes at all?
Yes.
You are?
That do you put the around you, the tanks you fill around the trees, you mean?
Yeah, and it uses condensation.
Yeah.
You fill it once and it collects water from the air, and you put some nutrients in there at the beginning, and, you know, it's got support. It's got reduces the heat, escape, and you've got this little setup, incubator setup, so it's supposed to, this is the one with recycled paper, decomposes by itself, but it's good for a year, even in desert situations. They tried this in Morocco. They had 90% success rate with, you just pretty much one time, and then you leave it, and within a year or two, the trees are able to make it themselves. You know, they've got the root system. They've got a wicking set up, so the wick slowly goes down to the roots and feeds the nutrients in the water, the roots. So it's a neat setup. It's about 16 inches by 16 by 8. And this is Peter Hoff. He used to be a tulip grower in the Netherlands, and he created this. And it's there, $20 a box, pretty much. And then, he's had good success for it. This is just something, you know, there's other boxes out there, other kind of devices, but this is something that might help, especially if funding is there from the city or donations for the tree to get going, you know, and there's nobody around. And this has been done in desert situations and really dry climates and other, you know, the box is like secured, tethered down so it doesn't fly away and stuff. So they've kind of worked out the design, so it works pretty good. So this is one method of maybe relieving the manpower that is needed. So we're looking into that too, as we've been thinking about moving to Baja and doing something like this too, like a tree wall in Baja from coast to coast.
Uh-huh.
California, Gulf of California to the Pacific.
That would be good.
Yeah. Just, it's basically to make a statement. I mean, the idea is what we're really promoting. The idea that, you know, the planet is dying and we've got to do something for our survival. So it's the idea, getting the idea out there and then having the people agree to, yes, this makes sense, because it's really the agreement. We can't, you know, we can make laws and regulations and rebel and revolt and throw rocks and, you know, lobby our congressmen, or, you know, But it's really, it comes down to agreement. And so we're just making sense of things and sharing what we found out and then seeing if other people would agree to, you know, do their own thing, basically, what you're doing. You've started, you're a great example, you know, in your community, what one person can do.
Right. I mean, if I can do this, you know, everybody else could do something too. I mean, there's no reason other than just making yourself get out there and do it. You know, just do it. Yeah.
You know, Bob, do you have anything else? Regine?
No, I think that's very commendable. You know, the... you know, if Jean, you know, Alexa can, you know, to spend more time, you know, with you, Val, and learn a little bit more about the new presentation, you know, it's kind of a cliche, but hugging a tree is next to godliness. You know, it helps
it
you
is.
Connect with the real side of life, and you know, that's something she may want to share with more of her kids, you know, and maybe tie into your children presentation.
No, I do. I try to encourage the kids to more, you know, enjoy the forest, learn how to enjoy it, than actually working hard, you know, just that sort of thing. That, yes, I do. And all the volunteers, the adult volunteers that I have, they feel the same way. You know, we just want them to learn about nature and be happy that they were there and encourage them to do more later on in their life.
And I think that's wonderful. And if you, Jean, if you spend more time with Val and having him explain the new presentation, you know, and some of the things that he's working with, you'll discover that there's a lot of really, really super, super benefits that you're not even aware of when you start becoming aware of the new presentation, and what you're doing connects directly with that. And that's one of the reasons why Val and we're so interested, and we think what you're doing is so wonderful. But that's something I'll leave for you and Val to discuss.
Thank you.
Yeah, so, Jean, do you have like a... You want to go over how people can contact you, or do you want people to contact you or donations?
Well, they can go. Our website is hbtrees.org. It's hbtrees.org. And
mm-hmm.
there's a really great film on it. It's called Saving Green. This young man, I call him young, he's in his 20s. He worked for a film company. And the way I understood it, the film company told him to go do something this past summer. So he made a film about us, about the parks. And really not, we're in the film, but the film is about the parks in Huntington Beach. And to me, he did a fabulous job of explaining how they all came about, what the problems are, is taking care of them now, because they made so many of these little pocket parks in Huntington Beach. They're an expense for the city. And he explained all that. I think watching the film is just fabulous. Saving Green. But our website shows all our volunteers, not all, but a lot of them, some of the stuff we do. But it's called hbtrees.org. And if needless to say, anybody wanted to contribute, that's always nice too. We have a GoFundMe page for my bridge, I think. Oh, no, we have a GoFundMe page for the trail. That's what we have. We're trying to raise money for the trail plans. There's one section of the trail that I want to make into a hummingbird area. So I want to put all hummingbird trees and hummingbird native plants that will attract them. Because we got a butterfly section on the trail, and now we're going to make a hummingbird section on the trail. So, yeah, I think there's a GoFundMe. The woman who does all this for me on the website, she put that, the hummingbird section. Yeah, we're going to try to get some money to help us do that. Yeah. And my bridge,
yeah,
I think I have to go up with somebody rich.
Right.
Like a corporation, right. Like a corporation or something.
Mm-hmm.
So
I saw the
yeah.
film. It was wonderful. Yeah, I was
that
trying
Saving
to get hold
Green.
Of it. So I did it. Yes,
isn't
spot
nice?
Is great. Yeah.
And he showed
well done.
That.
He's just a student. He's just a
had,
young kid.
Yeah, and it's such an it's so nicely done. He moved to San Francisco area last I heard, but he's just a nice
mm-hmm.
person. I mean, and he spent at least 6 months making it. It was he just did a
right.
fabulous job. That's all I can say. And we just have so many nice things that happen to us like that. Just it's like, oh my goodness, another nice thing is going to happen to us. I can't say be thankful enough for all the nice things that happen to us.
You know, you're doing a lot of good for people, so it's going to come your way.
Well,
nice things. So. Thank you.
Where
will you
well,
be this week? I'd like to come and see you soon, but where will you be doing something out there?
Just up at the Urban Forest.
This week?
Yeah, there's supposed to be some veterans coming. I don't know how many, but they're coming. They're veterans. This Saturday.
Okay.
At
this,
6711 Ellis.
Okay. Okay. Well,
perfect.
Thank you, Jean. Yeah, thank you for
no
being
problem.
On. We really enjoyed your story and your projects, what you're doing, and you're doing such good work. We will definitely
well,
connect
you.
With you again. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Hope to talk to you soon. Uh-huh.
Thank you, Jean.
Okay.
That's it for
bye.
The Creative Literal Sites. Thank you, Bob, for being on and contributing, and we'll see you again in a couple weeks. Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. Thank you, Val. All right.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm Jane. Yep. Thank you all. Bye.